Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction, episode 564, Science Faction, Contagious Vaccines and Giant Eyeballs.
Is that the side effect of one of the vaccines? Like, that's how you know who got the vaccine. They're like, we tried the passports thing. It didn't work. Now everybody who gets it gets anime eyes.
Well, I was going to say, if that were the case, then like every Korean man would force his wife to get whatever that vaccine was, even if it didn't apply to her, just to get the giant cartoon eyes.
Bobby, let's not limit it to the very wise tastes of our Korean brothers and sisters. Let's just say that there are others among us who also wish that hentai was something that they could experience in real life and not just through some sort of filtered, I feel dirty watching these.
Yeah, you're still waiting for them, the hentai creators, to get the Jurassic Park-esque technology, so you no longer have to settle for animated tentacles, which in your mind is actually discrimination by forcing you to have to see a animated form of your favorite sexual pleasures. You are of a persecuted minority, if you will.
Yeah, like, for example, I'm visiting, I somehow was invited to Anime Park, and, somebody just tried to breed anime women in this like perverse sex theme park for sex predators. And then it turns out that at some point they evolved tentacles using those on the guests. And that's because instead of frog DNA, they used octopus DNA to fill the gaps. And everybody's freaked out, but me, my clothes are ripped off and I'm like, hey, when in Rome.
Yeah, the movie Anaconda to you thought it was an erotic thriller. Yeah. What is a snake other than just a living tentacle?
I mean, don't get me wrong. That snake's into some rough play.
Oh, and speaking of the snake of the show, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. And with me always is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. And if you're the snake, I am Eve.
I'm constantly asking you to eat this apple that you're not supposed to eat.
It goes right to my thighs.
So, Damian, I actually had an interesting thought. I took a little road trip for work last week, and I went through what is the moonscape of California, like a barren area of nothingness. And I'm used to pretty barren areas of nothingness in California. I thought I'd explored those pretty well.
I volunteer at senior homes. What?
Yeah, I was going through, and I was thinking to myself, I wonder how many listeners I'm driving by as I do this. Like, if you were to put a swath of 100 feet on each side of my car as our 100 feet wouldn't work. So let's go a couple miles on each side of the car as I'm driving by. I wonder how many listeners I am passing by. And I've had that thought before. And sometimes if you're driving through a place like LA or San Diego or Orange County or any kind of urban environment, that might be quite a few people. It might be quite a few listeners that you happen to be just technically driving within a few miles of. And I can say with 100% certainty that there was zero listeners, at least on the second leg of my trip, there were zero people I was passing by within a few miles that listened to this show. A, there was basically no humans in general.
A lot of Joe Rogan fans who would have passed.
The drive up there, let's just say, like, you know that podunk idea we have of a hillbilly wearing overalls with only one strap over because the other one's ripped off and there's holes in it and they have a big gangly beard and like three teeth and they're using the term y'all a lot. Like, the places I was going, they think those guys are very hoity-toity upper crust gentlemen. Like, the places that I was...
Oh, big city overalls. I see what you're talking about. Oh, look at him. Yeah, big city faux teeth man over here getting all the ladies.
Oh, you get to wear the overalls. I see. Yeah, well, maybe you should come back down to reality, son, where the rest of Americans live, and come wear some underalls.
We all can't afford 2X moonshine, city boy.
It gave me just a great respect for how far podcasts can travel, because even though I was in the middle of a moonscape in the middle of nowhere, I thought to myself, someone could theoretically download our podcast. They could start listening to weekly science stories and with your regular weekly taste of dick jokes as well. They could be doing that if they chose to. Now, they're not going to, but it is physically, I'm getting internet service here. It is physically possible for that to happen.
Now, you see, when I said Joe Rogan experience, I assumed you were talking about, like, you were driving through Bakersfield, and that's what you said.
No, Bakersfield is a metropolitan oasis from where I was.
It's practically like San Francisco, but like San Francisco in the Star Trek universe, where it's the galactic center of a utopian empire. I got you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, exactly. And so I thought to myself, it kind of gave me a feeling. I wonder how many people out there are listening from weird, remote, super far off places. I think we got a click from Antarctica one time, which I figured had to be like a Dr. Nick associate that was down there. That doesn't really count as backwater, though, because I think you
assume it wasn't Dr. Nick. Like Dr. Nick couldn't...
You think he was here at the time. I think he was here when we got it. But like, I was like, well, Antarctica is the opposite, actually. If you think about it, Antarctica, I think you need a PhD just to get on the plane. So like, those guys, probably a different level. But I wonder how many people in like bumfuck middle of nowhere Iowa or some Bogan in the middle of Australia. I wonder how many of you are listening. If you're in Bogan country, go ahead and give us a contact on my Facebook page, because I was kind of curious about this for the entire drive.
But we don't want to characterize all rural people. Like Southern California rural people, just because so much of us is desert, and the type of person to say, look at a desert and say, yep, this is for me, let's put down roots right here, is a very different person than, let's say, somebody who does the same in like a beautiful forest in the Pacific Northwest.
Totally. Yeah.
Like there's a lot more amphetamines, I feel, that drive the Southern California decision versus...
Yeah, 100%. You got to factor in Trek nuts. But it's just an interesting thought. I'm interested to hear how many random rednecky people are listening to us out there. And that would be an interesting testament. I want to start our own version of the Juggalos, Damien. We'll call them the Science-a-los.
We'll do better. Hey, we can do better, but I like that.
Yeah, and we'll start, and we'll have our own annual meeting of our Science Alos at some place where we will all get together for a huge convention where we will paint our faces and drink Faygo, but do it better than the Juggalos.
Out of a chalice? No, I think they do that. Damn it. No, we go the other way. Out of a beer bong. If Juggalos are going to go classy, we're going to go non-classy.
Okay. By the way, side note, totally unrelated. I was listening to our good friend Paige Wesley's podcast, Cult Podcast, and they had a little series on the Juggalos. And I don't know if you realize this, but the Juggalos are actually like not even that many layers deep. The actual basis for the Juggalo mythology and everything behind them are actually very evangelical Christian.
Doesn't surprise me. The Midwest is...
It surprised the fuck out of me. What do you mean it doesn't surprise you?
It's the Midwest. Everything boils down to Jesus at some point. All the people that don't believe in Jesus leave. There's no place for them there. Like what you have there is concentrated Jesus.
All right, everybody, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Concentrated Jesus, by the way. I don't know. Is that a punk band? What is that? That's something.
Yeah, that's something that the priest tells you is going to go in your mouth.
But he's 36. He should fucking know. Like the priest in court. Damien is 36. He knew fucking full well.
Oh, dear. Article number one, contagious vaccination.
I find a lot of the things that I get from concentrated Jesus are also highly transmissible. So if it could
be... Oh, okay. Yeah, that could be your contagious vaccination.
Syphilis is like Jesus. It's very contagious.
So, Damien, this is great because this is an idea I have brought up on this show no less than half a dozen times in a somewhat joking fashion, like my idea to turn all libraries into jerk-offatoriums. You guys can look back at previous research for that. That, by the way, is still a great idea. But
yeah, like you go to PTA meetings and say it like a joking fashion. Like, you'll raise your hand, find some like bullshit thing to talk about, but you'll work that in and say it in a joking fashion, kind of read the room to see if anybody else is for your hand job library.
Libraries are almost not needed anymore. We have a ton of books that are available online. We don't need these physical resources. Even if we do need a place to go study that doesn't need to have all the space with the books, we're gonna have to do something with all that stack space, and hand jobs are the best way into the brighter future of education. But anyway, regardless, I'm gonna go on my other idea, which is one that I brought up before. I have thought of this as a brilliant idea since I was a young man. I think I thought of this idea when I was like 10, and here it is. Shouldn't we engineer what would essentially be a vaccination? It's a vaccination you give to somebody, but the vaccination itself is contagious. Now, I had this idea in terms of STDs. So like you get the vaccination, let's say for herpes, right? And now you get this vaccination. Doesn't exist yet, by the way, in case you were wondering, but you get a vaccination for herpes. Now, not only do you not get herpes, but that vaccination becomes an STD in itself, meaning you then have unprotected sex with somebody. Now they are vaccinated from herpes. They get basically essentially the vaccination. And then it spreads the same way, you know, exponential growth as people have sex with more and more people, the same way STDs themselves spread, it would spread around. And not only would that be great because it would obviously cut down on STDs, which is a very important thing, but then you'd be like, hey, that nerdy kid Bill up there, you know, he's not good at sports and he's not really clever and, you know, doesn't smell great. But did you hear he just got the new HPV vaccination? If we go bang him right now, we can be immune to HPV for the rest of our life. And you're like, young ladies' mothers would be like, you should really bang Bill. He just got the new suite of vaccinations. Go give a quick once over on Bill. How about that?
So in the same world where vaccinations somehow lead to sex, no other male besides Bill either has, like, is Bill the son of King Pfizer?
All I'm saying is you give motivation to early adopters in my world, and therefore everybody wants to be the first to get the new vaccine. The new vaccination would be like the new iPhone. Like, everyone would be lined up to get it. They want to get it badly because they want to be the first ones at school to flaunt around this newly vaccinated penis, and then they themselves can perpetrate the vaccine.
Counterpoint, a group of thieves finds out about Bill. Like, let's just say they're real bullies. And they break into Bill's house, kidnap him, and then milk him for the vaccine.
Bill wins either way. Listen, this is what I'm saying. It's like, we would incentivize
people.
He's
sedated for the milking.
I mean, he still gets the attention, you know? Like, it's still, somebody really loves Bill at this point.
To work his body. These are real pieces of shit, Bobby, named Bobby and Davian, and they need that Bill cum so that they can slay this town.
They need Bill's concentrated Jesus to make this all work.
Hey, Bobby, my hand's tired. Tap in. Don't use our real names. Shut up.
Sorry, I'll use your code name. Hey, Damien, tap it.
Good.
Our code names are just our own names switched.
Yeah, but he'll think the one with the big nose is Bobby, and that's just going to throw off the cops. So.
To be fair, we haven't been vaccinated yet, and we're slowly going nuts from syphilis, so don't blame us. So anyway, I was reading this week's Discover, and they basically talked about this exact idea. Now, they didn't use it for STDs, but they talked about this like exact idea in relation to all of the issues we're having with COVID vaccination, et cetera, et cetera. Because if you think about this, if you had the ability to vaccinate one person and that person spreads that vaccine to other people, sans a different injection, well, then that one injection could end up being thousands and thousands of vaccines. So if you think of a situation like we're in right now, where all of a sudden you have a global pandemic and only so many vaccines are available, if those were able to basically multiply or exponentially grow themselves in that kind of normal fashion, well, man, the things like pandemics would get slowed down real fast because you didn't have to put a needle in everybody's arm. You had to put a needle in, you know, 100 people's arms and it went out to a million people.
Yeah, or milk one Bill.
Just, it depends how much Bill... I mean, if Bill's an energetic young man and you find the right form of visual erotica for him, you might be able to get a million doses out of him.
I'm going to be honest with you. We probably can't take Bill back home. We should probably just keep him in a basement, take him for all he's worth, probably have like a Saw-like situation. I'm sorry, Bobby, but this, we agreed to this, and this is just what it's come to. I'm listening to other ideas if you got them, but I think we just better milk Bill for a few months until our cum horse gives out.
I wonder how scientist Bill feels about this whole conversation, the fact that we decided to use his name.
Well, Bill's in the basement, so we can ask him. We turned the heat up. He likes that.
There's two types of different self-spreading vaccines that we can talk about. The first is transferable, and the second is transmissible. So transferable ones would be something that we use, and this is mainly thought of so far, it's been proposed in animal models. So let's say you have something like bats. Obviously, bats carry a whole bunch of diseases that we don't want to get. There can be millions of bats in a single cave. So we don't want to try and get in there and put a shot in everyone's arm. We can't even be sure that we can get in there and get to everyone. But if we do something like take a paste that has a certain vaccine in it and spread it on the back of a single bat, that bat can then go back into the cave and it will be licked off by hundreds of other bats that are in there grooming it, and that could spread that transferable vaccine to those hundreds of other bats. So in that case, it's not like it is replicating in the bat and then moving through the bat population. It is just that the bat acts as one big vaccine carrier that brings it to a bunch of other bats who all essentially inoculate themselves by exposure to that.
If you were to vaccinate or put some sort of viral vaccination, contagious vaccination on Batman's fist, you would actually get something similar in the criminal underworld.
That's actually how Two-Face got that way. Only half his face got vaccinated. He took a right hook.
I tried. Listen, he's a former boxer. He rolled with the punch.
So that would be a transferable vaccine. Then there's something called a transmissible vaccine. And that's what I was talking about, where essentially you give somebody a vaccine, then it could be in the form, and likely would be in the form in this case, of some kind of inert virus. So you take a virus. This is kind of what Johnson & Johnson did with their vaccine for COVID. You take an adenovirus, a weakened one. You slap some, you know, in the case of the COVID vaccine, you slap the ACE2 protein on it, and then your body learns to fight it, and it fights it, but it doesn't actually get sick from that adenovirus, because the adenovirus affects chimps and not us anyway, and it's not going to do anything. So you do something like that, where you give somebody a virus that is a vaccine, so they have a modified virus that's a vaccine, your body fights it off, but you also pass that virus on to other people, either through typical cold stuff of like coughing, sneezing, et cetera, or through regular transmission, STD, breathing, however it is, you pass it to other people, and now everybody you come into close physical contact with also essentially gets exposed to this vaccine and is now vaccinated against whatever it is you're trying to fight.
An anti-vaxxer wakes up one morning after a long night of drinking. They're pretty sure they went to bed with somebody, but they don't remember who that person was, and they sure as shit don't see them here now. They stumble their way to the bathroom, and there, written in the mirror, in lipstick, it says, "Welcome to the world of peer-reviewed science, bitch."
No! Yeah.
Microchip. He starts clawing at his blood from his veins from microchips.
So, like, again, we could theoretically do this with inert viruses that we inactivate. Maybe things that aren't even necessarily totally inert. Maybe they give you a slight cough or a slight cold, and that's how they get transmitted very well. But with them, they carry the genetic instructions for a specific protein on a very dangerous other infectious agent that, you know, that just that one little protein isn't dangerous, but the infectious agent is. And then your body sees that protein, learns to kill it, and then you're vaccinated. And it spreads around the same way COVID spread around, from people coughing and whatnot. It's a really interesting idea. Again, something I thought of when I was like 12, and I'm really surprised we actually haven't gone much further with this. It turns out that this idea was kind of bouncing around the same time I was thinking about it in the 90s and the 2000s. And there were some attempts with animal populations to do this. They did this with rabbits, I think, for Lassa disease on a specific island in the Mediterranean. They've done this a few times to try it in animal models, but it never really took hold, the idea of doing it for humans. And I think nowadays you'd have problems with HIPAA and stuff, because you'd have issues of essentially performing some kind of medical procedure on a bunch of people who didn't necessarily consent because they're walking around just breathing the air. I know it doesn't seem like it would be any different than getting somebody sick with a cold, and it's actually not, but the fact that somebody engineered it would probably break a lot of compliance rules. I think we've actually gone past the time in like individual medical law that you could pull something like this off.
You open up Cuba. All embargoes, done. All trade relations, normalized with Cuba. The CIA pays Cuba to invent a lot of sex clubs and even make them like subsidize them, make them, you know, make like the Southwest of sex clubs. But they're really just like ways for them to spread these viruses, defeat HIPAA laws, and then bring them back to the States.
I like it. And then they go around coughing, and then it's everybody else's problem.
Yeah. No, my beautiful syphilis is being cured up. No, I had so much concentrated Jesus.
Very interesting. Go ahead and check out this week's Discover for that. Again, it's another one of those short popular science articles, totally accessible, totally readable, and very, very, very interesting. I would like to see a future where this type of stuff happens, where we are all vaccinated against everything, and when nobody had to go to a doctor's office to do it, because like one or two dudes did go to a doctor's office, and they just banged the shit out of the rest of us.
Nobody's more grateful to this being widespread than Bill. It's the only chance he has of escaping the dungeon, is that his beautiful semen is no longer worth so much on the open market.
No wonder scientist Bill prefers me to you, because I don't put him in all these awkward situations.
He's not here, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't listen.
All right, on to article number two. My, what big eyes you have.
Thank you. I got them from your mother? I don't know.
That doesn't seem possible.
Yeah, she said your mom sells ox eyes because she's from the old country. And
what do you use ox eyes for?
spells, mostly witch spells.
Okay, fair enough. Makes sense. Everything checks out. This new study looks at a super interesting correlation that has been discovered between pupil size and intelligence. So this is a bonkers ass story. It sounds like it's science fiction. It actually comes out of this week's Scientific American, another one that I absolutely advise you go read if you get a chance to. This is a very, very interesting article. So we've talked about eye tracking and pupil studies before. In fact, one of our old guest scientists, Dr. Ava, she had a whole lab at UCSD where she did linguistic eye tracking analysis, where they had little, you basically have these computers that with cameras on them that watch your eyes and they can tell if you're looking left or right and your pupil dilation and you know, where you're, how long it takes you to do something and how many times you blink, et cetera, et cetera.
We joked about it earlier, but what you're saying is if pupil size is correlated with higher intelligence, I'm not actually into hentai. I am a sapiosexual. I am attracted to intelligent women dressed as Asian schoolgirls.
No, you're going for the whole eyes and
I
this
only am
study.
Looking at the pupil and the well-drawn breasts.
That's like if it's like when my wife takes her shirt off in front of me and she tells me to stop staring at her boobs. And I said, no, I'm just staring at the nipples.
Yeah. I'm just like, listen. Listen, do you think I give a shit about the white part up there? The iris? That's hot too. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, so this is a super interesting study. We've been doing these type of studies, looking at eyes and eye movements and eye dilations, et cetera, for a very long time. You know, we've had entire devices and in scientific industries set up around these. And as we just mentioned, scientific labs that we ourselves are connected to through Dr. Ava. So that type of work has been done for a while. What one research group learned when they were trying to study kind of learning and a few other things, they started seeing an interesting correlation. And it was between pupil size or resting pupil size and fluid intelligence. And it was actually pretty strong. And it maintained itself through a pretty decent and rigorous experimental design. So it sounds crazy, but this seems fairly legit.
So of course they're taking in more light. They have a bigger aperture. So that means like just by definition, they have a bigger field of vision. You know, they're getting more learning done when they look at a book or in class. They have an unfair advantage over us non-anime individuals.
Well, what are they saying? They're saying that in resting pupil size is correlated to your ability to process information and think and make decisions, et cetera, et cetera. How could that possibly make sense? How could your pupil size, which if you would have asked me before this, I would have said, you know, pupil size really doesn't vary that much. It just depends on how bright the light is in the room. Or I guess if you have taken some kind of mind-altering substance. But other than that, I would think pupil size is just pupil size.
I have a theory. You know, when you, let's just say you get your pupils dilated due to some eye surgery or some eye procedure you have to have, right?
Sure.
You're very sensitive to light, right? What if the people who just have naturally more dilated or larger pupils, they're just more sensitive to light. So you're less likely to see them outside playing sports growing up. Mm. They're less likely to see them engaging in physical activity. You're more likely to see them cuddled up with a good book.
And the big pupils help them read better.
Yes, and manage their tentacles during sex.
So the answer is that actually it's controlled by a part of your brain called the locus coeruleus, which releases norepinephrine. And we know that norepinephrine is a neurotransmitter. It's a hormone. It does a whole bunch of stuff in our body. It can change how we perceive things, how close attention we're paying, how good we are at learning, whether or not we can remember stuff. And it's an important part of the functioning of a healthy brain. Well, what we see when there's a dysfunction of that particular part of the brain is that the brain doesn't work so well together. So even if the individual parts of the brain aren't damaged or impaired in any other way, without the norepinephrine and the chemicals flowing as they're supposed to be, your brain is not functioning as a composite unit super well. And so there seems to be a kind of breakdown of organized brain activity. You're not able to put things together nearly as well.
So this part of your brain is like the coach. You know, like, let's just say you could have a brain full of hot shots. You know, like, yeah. Look at this, is the best. He was the best damn cerebral cortex on his college team. But now we're at the pros.
That Pons was making the rounds on ESPN when he was in high school. They were talking about him getting drafted, that Pons.
You think we got this team of superstars, it'd be, we'd have a world genius here. The problem is they don't work together. They're all got egos. We need a good coach.
This part of the brain does a lot of trust fall exercises with the other parts of the brain. It takes them camping and shows them that their differences aren't nearly as big as their similarities. And it turns a scrappy group of kids just trying to get their baseball back from a dog into a real team.
That's not even you mix so many elements from movies in that last one, but I think you get the thrust of where you were going. He helps their local hockey team get to first place.
No, he's got the right movie.
There wasn't a fucking coach in the Sandlot.
They get the baseball back, and then Ed O'Neill helps that one kid get better at believing in themselves. And the guy from the wrong side of the tracks, he was there.
You know what? I hope you legitimately get a million emails for this, and not like the fake ones. For I call BS.
And it ends up with Rodney Dangerfield finally accepting that girls' soccer can be an interesting thing to be involved in.
But receiving no respect after the acknowledgement. Gotcha.
So the idea is that this part of the brain is regulating both your pupils and hormones and neurotransmitters that are going through your brain that are affecting how you function cognitively. That's super interesting because, I mean, listen, I don't want to get like Gattaca on you or anything, but it's going to be hard knowing this not to start looking at people's eyes and just being like, you have the pupils of a simpleton. At some point, there's going to be a job interview criteria where somebody is like looking at you and you've taken special Visine big pupils before you went to the job in order to try. Ironically, you're going to look more like you're on drugs for a job interview to try and convince everybody that you're intelligent.
I'm also on LSD, if that's what you're assuming. But no, these are my natural pupils, if you must know. Lizard man.
Super interesting. I'm interested to see where this goes. I'm also interested to see this becoming something that becomes like widespread knowledge and then people try and game the system. So like you're going to take your Tinder profile pic and you want to seem like you're smart. And so you like dim the lights in the room and get your pupils really big before finally taking that picture or taking the aforementioned LSD or something like that. Just anything to try and really make those pupils pop.
Yeah, I take them from a perfectly 90 degree angle. So that you can see the pupil dead on.
Oh, dear. Thank you, audience, for coming back to Science Faction 564, where you learned all about contagious vaccination and how resting pupil size correlates to intelligence. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 565.
What I'm saying is hentai finds a way.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.